Hello everyone and welcome to another special podcast from Roach Valley Radio. I'm Adam Clark and alongside me today is Charlie Rattan.
Yeah, good day everybody. Good day Adam.
So today we're going to be talking about hydrogen, and there was a special hydrogen conference you could say held in the Northwest this week. So, Charlie, first of all, what is hydrogen?
Yeah, it's a good question, Adam. It's actually the most abundant element on our planet. It's part of everything. If you look at the composition of water, H2O, H2 is the hydrogen element of it. So it's actually everywhere. We breathe it, we live it, we drink it. So it's the most abundant element in our world.
So there's quite a lot of talk at the moment with, obviously, climate change taking over the media at some stages of the news agenda. Why all the fuss over hydrogen now?
Yeah, although it's the most abundant element in the universe, it's not always the most easy one to extract. But as you've correctly said, there is a lot of talk about it. It's everywhere. I track the industry and... it's clearly it's on the cusp of a break-off. The economist Walt Rostow came up with a theory a few years ago, and he said that an industry needs certain things to be ready for what he termed a take-off. You need a banking system, so you need the investors to be able to invest, and it has to be scalable. But it also needs to be ready to go. And I think that's perhaps one of the reasons why now the conditions are starting to gather for Walt Rostow's theory to be put into practice here in the northwest of England, which is a world leader in hydrogen and beyond. So the conditions are there. As I said at the start, hydrogen has been around since Victorian times. Hydrogen was already a part of town gas, which many listeners will recall when the old coal and gas industry was visible throughout the northwest of England, and certainly in the listener ship of Roach Valley Radio. So why now? I think because it works very well with renewables. You can produce hydrogen from any number of mechanisms. You can use it from coal, you can use it from methane, you can use it from anything that generates a turbine or movement. You can use it for a process called electrolysis. And obviously we've seen wind turbines and we've seen tidal. So all of those can be used to generate hydrogen. And the difference, I suppose, with those and some of the older tech is that they are variable, which means that wind blows 24/7. But in the middle of the night, you might not have a big demand, certainly not in the UK. People are asleep. But that doesn't mean you want to waste. You don't want to waste it. So you can store the energy. You can store it as a battery, which are common or becoming increasingly common in the renewable energy industry, or even better, via hydrogen.
So you talked about it there, that the northwest of England is one of the big boys in the industrial revolution a few hundred years ago, and the government have said in the run up to the last general election that they want to decarbonise by 2050. The local government in Greater Manchester have said they want to decarbonise by 2038, and Liverpool, just a few miles away, they've said they want to decarbonise by 2040. How do we actually do this?
Yeah, it's an eye-wateringly ambitious target, Adam. As you know, our listenership is, the bulk of it is in perhaps Greater Manchester, Bury, Heywood, Rochdale, all part of that curtilage of Greater Manchester. And the Greater Manchester Combined Authority, which you've just mentioned, has signed up to decarbonise, to become net zero within 18 years, which is a phenomenally ambitious target for where we are now. That's 12 years in advance of the national target, and there are perhaps good reasons for that. One thing that emerged from the conference the other day is that industrialists, so the manufacturing base, we're still quite strong here in manufacturing in the northwest. We had a strong cotton industry and we've got strong manufacturing base elsewhere, but the manufacturers are crying out to decarbonize. It's not as if they don't want to, and they're just looking for a mechanism to do that. And obviously, you've got big companies, you've got Cadent, you've got some of the electricity suppliers, you've got SR, you've got shipping companies, all based here in the Northwest. And they're now looking, how do we meet that 18-year target? And that's perhaps where hydrogen can come into its own.
So, Charlie, this renewable energy comes in all sorts of different formats. So why hydrogen over any other sort of type of renewable energy, for example, a battery?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Adam. I suppose one of the reasons is that hydrogen can be stored in various forms. It's relatively straightforward to form it into a liquid. There are opportunities there to use ammonia as a kind of mechanism to liquefy hydrogen. That means you can put it in tankers, and you can, rather like oil and gas, you can put it in fuel stations. I wouldn't call them petrol stations, but people are looking for hydrogen as a liquid that it's particularly good for heavy goods vehicles, your heavy plants. It's the hydrogen likes the heavy lifting stuff. Batteries are perhaps better for small scale stuff. Here in the Northwest, as you know, we are a big producer of salt here in the neighbouring county of Cheshire. And as salt is extracted, obviously it leaves a cavern, very, very good geological caverns. And one of the theories is that why not use the caverns as giant, do you remember the old gas storage canisters that we used to see up and down the gas works? Well, why not use the natural environment underground to store the salt, old salt caverns as the empty, to store the air version or the gas version of hydrogen, because you can store it as a gas as well. And that is why in the Northwest, existing industries, because hydrogen is already vented as a byproduct of the chemical industry. So why not store it? Why not put it underground in salt caverns in Cheshire? And as I mentioned, the offshore oil and gas industry off the Northwest coast has left a lot of, as the oil and gas is extracted, it leaves exactly the same kind of chamber. So why don't we capture the carbon, clean the environment, repurpose using existing pipelines, and then put it in the caverns offshore as well. So there are certain advantages and certain opportunities. It's not cheap, but there are opportunities for companies already engaged in this, like Cadent, like SR, or salt companies, to see that the versatility of hydrogen, air, liquid, other forms as well, is a very, very flexible store of renewably produced energy, and also traditionally produced energy as well. It can capture the carbon produced from some of the processes and help big industry decarbonise very quickly.
Just to pick up on a point you made there about the cost of it, is that what you think is stopping people?
Yeah,
stopping
undoubtedly.
Companies,
that's perhaps
from
why now. It's I think the Manchester Metropolitan University are planning to kind of transfer their estate from methane to hydrogen, and they worked out that it costs quadruple the costs of methane. So that begs the question, well why do it? If it's four times the cost, it's not an obvious kind of statement why you would then proceed. Well, there are a number of reasons for proceeding. We have signed up to some pretty ambitious targets, as we've just mentioned, but I think the real reason is that the more you do, the more the cost comes down. Economies of scale kick in. And this isn't just fanciful. The government's just seen offshore wind, which used to be terribly expensive in the early days as the industry got up and running. It needed support. And the cost of offshore wind has dropped by effectively three quarters in two decades. And one of the reasons is a little bit of support at the start, but also the economies of scale kick in. And because of offshore wind, people have seen an industry that's gone global. It's the UK has a global lead. Rochdale companies are involved in that. Grenada, they're involved in some of the offshore wind farms off the UK. And people have said, well, it's worked for offshore wind. Why don't we repeat it? Some of the principles that work there, create clusters, create economies of scale, and ramp up something. We're going to have to do it anyway. So why don't we do it more quickly and get an industry that is world leading as a result of that?
So, Charlie, earlier this week you spent the day at the Thornton Science Park that's now part of the University of Chester, and you spoke to Professor Joe Howe. Let's have a listen.
So I'm with Professor Joe Howe today, and I've just had an exhilarating talk on some of the hydrogen, the nascent hydrogen future for the northwest of England. And Joe, could you tell me a little bit about today's event and what it's all about?
Okay, today's event is a UK Carbon Capture and Storage Research Consortium event, which is funding early career researchers across the UK. By early career researchers, I mean young academics who are doing, towards the end of their degree, doing master's degree, doing research degrees and looking at the whole development of the hydrogen economy piece and the industrial decarbonisation piece across the UK. And they've come to Thornton Science Park today primarily because we are at the heart of this big industrial cluster. You've seen we're actually in the within the curtilage of Stanley Oil Refinery. Next door to us we have CF Fertilisers, the largest ammonia producer in the UK. Just the other side of us we have Urenco, Uranium Enrichment Company. And then further to the east we have INEOS, INEOS Chlorovinyls, the Energy from Waste plant there, Rock Savage International. There's so much industry around here. But the question is, how can we begin to decarbonise that? Well, hydrogen is one particular method of doing that. It's hugely exciting, and that's why so many kids have turned up today to this event.
Well, it's not just kids. There's some real industry insiders. There's former colleagues of mine from E.ON in there and ex-Shell people in there. So I've just put rather cheekily something out on LinkedIn. I just nicked one of your slides, put it out there. Bang. So that shows me that there's a global interest in what you're doing here, and it's particularly heartening for those of us that live in the northwest of England to think, actually, we are right in the centre of this. It's happening, but it's not happening in North Dakota or California. Well, it is, but it's also happening here in the home of the Industrial Revolution, the northwest of England. Have you any views on that?
Yes, it is. It is absolutely happening here. So the government, through its industrial strategy and through its industrial decarbonisation grand challenge, it's challenging these industrial clusters to come up with the proposition to be the first industrial cluster in the world to decarbonise. And it's saying that by 2030, one of these industrial clusters has to halve its industrial emissions in comparison with 1990. And by 2040, one of these industrial clusters to completely decarbonise. Now, how are they going to do that? Possibly through carbon capture and storage mechanisms utilising existing technologies, or possibly through fuel switching from methane and petroleum-based products to hydrogen. And the only thing that you get, the only emission from hydrogen is water.
It's amazing, isn't it? I've been involved with the Greater Manchester Industrial Strategy. There's a net zero by 2038 climate emergency call by Manchester and Liverpool. Steve Rotherham, 2040 was his date. That's not far off. We're in 2020 now. To get there, we are going to need hydrogen. And now, have you anything to say to, I mean, this is for Roche Valley Radio, a community radio station, but it's an industrial area, it's a manufacturing area, and it's also at the heart of the first industrial revolution. Have you anything to say to Roche Valley Radio listeners about the opportunity that's out there if they were willing to engage and see that the future is going to be a little bit different from how it is now, but it's also a very exciting future?
Well, first of all, I would ask your constituents or your residents to invite me over to give them a talk, and I'll talk about hydrogen.
I'll ask Chamber Low Carbon, who are heavily involved in Lancashire. I'm sure they'd be delighted.
Absolutely.
I'm due to speak with them again. Perhaps you come along to that one as well and support that event. We'll get something diarised.
Now, I think in the near future you will see hydrogen going into houses. Not 100% pure hydrogen in the first instance, but a little blend. At the moment, going into our houses, the gas, it's methane, 100% methane. I think slowly but surely we'll see a blend coming in. Maybe 5%, 10%, 20% of hydrogen into our households. Secondly, I think we will see hydrogen fuel cell vehicles on our roads in the not too distant future. The government's talked a lot about electric vehicles. Well, most people think electric vehicles are the ones that you plug in at home. Hydrogen fuel cells, they're electric vehicles, but you don't plug them in. You take them to your local petrol station, and there'll be hydrogen fueling capability there, and you'll fill up your fueling station at that, and you'll fill up with hydrogen at your local fueling station. It's already in place. There's a lot of infrastructure in Germany. There's a lot of infrastructure in Japan. This year, your residents, your listeners, might want to watch the Olympic Games if it takes place, and they'll be the first hydrogen games in the world, because all of the transport around that site, all of the energy being consumed at the Olympic Games will be hydrogen.
The northwest of England's a manufacturing centre. We've just enjoyed listening to your kind of rumbustious speech next door. But one thing made quite clear, that I think manufacturing's had quite a depressing trajectory the last 20 years. But if it's to prosper, if it's to have a future, then surely it needs to embrace something like hydrogen.
Yes, it does. One of my concerns at the moment about industry and government targets is that a lot of industry is considering offshoring because of carbon targets and because of potential penalties associated with that. Now, if the government and if industry can embrace this opportunity of clean growth and decarbonisation and transition towards hydrogen and potentially capture the carbon that they're emitting and storing it in the first instance, I think there will be a lot of opportunities. Firstly, in terms of we will have the first clean growth industrial cluster in the world here. So the rest of the world will be looking at us. We will be developing technologies to decarbonise those particular industries. We will be able to sell them to the rest of the world. We will be doing the science here in the UK and in the Northwest, cascading that science into our schools, into the further education colleges, into the universities, so that we're equipping the kids of the future to realise the opportunities of decarbonisation.
Oh, how can I add to this? It's an exciting proposition indeed, and I'd just like to thank you, and hopefully the Roche Valley Radio listeners will share the enthusiasm that you've just shared with us there. Thank you very much indeed, Professor Joe Howe. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
So, Charlie, a great interview there with Professor Joe Howe. Was there anything that stuck out for you during that interview?
Yeah, indeed, Adam. I was impressed at how enthused Professor Howe was about the opportunity. But one thing that struck me was the sheer scope. He mentioned a whole heap of companies that were involved in the sector, and they range from people involved in the chemical industry to manufacturers, gas companies, existing refinery companies. I think he said something about the curtilage of Stanlow Refinery, a big site. It's got national significance, second biggest one, I think, in the UK. So the refinery people are starting to see the benefits. So the sheer scope of it was evidenced to me how many industries could be brought together. I think there's a feeling that the hydrogen economy, which people are starting to cotton on to, if you like, could enable other industries to themselves decarbonise and develop. They can do it in a zero carbon way. And one of the things that emerged is, just to make that happen, we need to think about getting a big pipeline either refurbished or in place so that the manufacturers can tap into it. The whole range from chemical to manufacturing to refining, the sheer range is what struck me from that interview.
Joe picked up on the point about the supply chain and careers for young people in this line of work. What have your views on that?
Yeah, we'll hear from Rhys Edwards a little later in this talk, Adam, about some of the younger opportunities. But one thing that struck me was obviously if you had to have a recalibration, and this is a big picture recalibration, schemes like this have gone out of fashion. Industrial strategies used to be quite common in the UK in the 1960s and 70s, and then they went really out of fashion for a few years. But one thing is, if you do this kind of joined up thinking, and you were to think, because this isn't going to be cheap, but you think, bring all the people together, it will actually create a significant opportunity. And who for? Well, there are a number of things that will spring out of it. First of all, the transport sector. I've mentioned hydrogen likes a big kit. So you're thinking, well, if you've got a forklift truck company, or if you've got a digger company, and there are certain ones that spring to mind. If you've got companies that make big kit like the heavy plant that we see on construction sites and so forth, it's well suited. If you're a company that makes pipelines or compressors to keep the pipelines moving smoothly, you might be well suited. If you were to look at how hydrogen could be dispensed as a fuel, I know that the big oil and gas companies, I deal with them a lot, these Shells and your BPs are all looking at this tech. And of course, hydrogen is quite physical. You can tax it. So the government itself quite likes it. If you're going to think about how do we keep the revenues, which oil and gas and petrol bring to the UK PLC, to the Treasury, hydrogen is a means of ensuring it. So you might look at where the land is going to go, where the pipe networks. Beyond that, if you look at the train companies, trains are made here in the Northwest, if anybody knows that. So there is a site, Alstom, at Widnes. And lo and behold, they're world leaders in some of the hydrogen tech. So you could find that the manufacturing base that I was going on about actually comes back and brings revenue into places on in the northwest of England, such as the hydrogen trains, which have been successfully trialled in Germany and Holland. And the only emissions from these trains is water. You don't need to bother with the electrical infrastructure. I know here in East Lancs, we've got our East Lancs Railway, which we cherish. And they're thinking of electrifying it, and they're thinking, should we put this catenary, as they call it, over it, Well, you don't need to do that with hydrogen. The hydrogen fuel tank might sit on the roof, or even better, underneath. And that's it. That's enough. You'll get the range. You can go up and down, and you get a clean transit into and out of Manchester through hydrogen. The tech is there. It works. And we've got the companies ready to build. If you've got a 2038 in target in Manchester, you'd be perhaps foolish not to at least try it. Other options are things like buses. Buses are made, and in the UK as well. You might want to look at whether you could buy some of those from Manchester and Liverpool. And also the support, the canisters. There are companies, BOC and others, that actually make the compressed containers for the movement of buses and vehicles. And that would be a good opportunity as well. All the infrastructure that goes with it, the valves, the kit, the measuring kit, all of that would be good. Going forward, we've got a lot of tech companies, Manchester. And as the Internet of Things becomes more prevalent, a lot of this can be monitored and gauged. There's an opportunity there to be smart and create virtual paths. This whole world, it sounds a bit like Doctor Who stuff or science fiction, but there's a whole world of opportunity as the country tilts away from methane and towards hydrogen.
You talked about it in the interview with Professor Ho about how everything is happening on our doorstep in the Northwest. Is that something that you're pleased with, Charlie?
Yeah, it's very close to my heart, as perhaps it is also, I suspect, to yours, Adam, here at Roche Valley Radio. This is where it started, in Bury and Bolton and Manchester and Rochdale. You look at the Industrial Revolution, where it started a couple of hundred years ago. This was known about, hydrogen was known about since William Murdoch, and in the early days of town gas, as it was called then, hydrogen was a part of that. And there are a few advantages to that. The kit, a lot of the existing kit can be reused. So here in the Northwest, we're looking at re-scoping the gas network. Can we squirt hydrogen through the existing gas network? Well, yes, if you line it. Hydrogen's got a different molecular structure, but they found out that it works quite well. You have to modify the ends, but it means that you don't need to dig up and everything and put a whole new load of kit. Existing kit can be modified, which is great news. So if you're an oil and gas company making bits of kit, you might want to think, well, actually, let's future-proof it. If you are a company making gas boilers, and there are some that spring to mind here in the Northwest, is it future-proof? Is it going to be hydrogen-ready? And I know that they are, because they are in that field as well. And all of this is here. It's within 20 miles of where we are now, Adam. The Manchesters, the Boltons, the Blackburns, the Burnleys, Berries, and the Rochdales. This is where it can happen, yeah?
So, Charlie, also at the conference earlier this week, you spoke to Reese Edwards, and she's a PhD student, and she organised the workshops for this conference. Let's take a listen and see what she had to say.
You've just brought some key stakeholders here to the Science Park at Chester. Would you like to tell me a little bit about today and what it's all about?
So today has been secured from funding by UK CCSRC Research Centre as part of their 2019 Activity Fund, and we've secured funding basically to host an event that would help develop the skills of early career researchers. So early career researchers are the focus of this event and at the heart of what we've planned. What we aim to do is just to highlight the kind of key advancements in technology in the hydrogen and CCUS field, and identify future areas of research where these early career researchers can apply their skills.
Well, I'm heavily involved in the offshore wind sector, which is expected to quadruple next 10 years, and all the offshore wind developers and the oil and gas companies moving into the sector are also looking at hydrogen. We've just seen the vibrancy in the room. Are you surprised at the reception that today's event has had and the enthusiasm that is evident for it?
No, not at all. I mean, so I started the PhD a year and a half ago, and every event that I go to is concerned with hydrogen. Not so much CCS, because my PhD is focused solely on hydrogen. There's always a massive sense of enthusiasm, and just in the last year and a half I've seen these slides progress. I've seen HyNet when it was like kind of first just portrayed, and now it's like talking about how it's going to extend in future. It's at the feed level for hydrogen production. So there's always enthusiasm, and it's always, you just watch the story as it builds. It's not the same stuff said over and over again. People are progressing, and people do see and provide evidence of how they have progressed in the last year or so.
One of the speakers said that when they go out and talk to manufacturers, they're pushing an open door. They're greeted, mm-hmm. the manufacturers do get it. Mm-hmm. They understand the need for decarbonisation.
Yeah.
And almost that they're willing the success of what is still a nascent hydrogen economy. Here in the Northwest, we were perhaps the founders of the Industrial Revolution a couple of hundred years mm-hmm. ago. What are your views on the potential for the hydrogen economy here in the Northwest?
I think it's huge. Going off what everyone was saying earlier, obviously you've got such high concentrations of CO2 emissions in the Northwest region. And if you look at hydrogen from the perspective of fuel switching, there is ample opportunities for hydrogen fuel switching, and in circumstances where that may not be the most applicable measure of decarbonisation, as John was saying in his previous presentation, that could maybe mean that carbon dioxide capture is more appropriate. So one of the key parts of my research is interviewing key stakeholders who are aligned with the hydrogen agenda in the Northwest region. That is the kind of geographical boundary. So I have spoke, I can't specifically name company names, but I've spoke to a lot of kind of major influential stakeholders in the Northwest hydrogen agenda concerned with it. And all of them, even if their specific initiatives they're doing aren't specific to hydrogen fuel switching, have considered it as another avenue for developing the hydrogen economy.
So when you talk of fuel switching, you mean a company might be burning methane or using oil
or
coal?
Yeah, so it could be, say, for industrial processes, it could be that they've got a kiln, a boiler. I'm not even going to pretend I know all of these kind of industrial pieces of equipment, but there's numerous studies going on at the moment, and that's looking at how you would, what the benefits of supplying hydrogen are instead of natural gas, what you would normally supply to these things. So obviously for heat, it's a major advantage. Electricity is a bit of a grey area. But a lot of these kind of industrial processes are powered by heat anyway.
It also strikes me that hydrogen seems very good for the heavy lifting, if you like, whereas EVs might be better for small-scale stuff, or the traditional Tesla type of battery might be mm-hmm. okay for small cars. When you come to large trucks and your large mm-hmm. industrial processes, that's when hydrogen really tends to come into its own.
Yeah, so just definitely from what I've came across in the literature review, there is a lot of people promote hydrogen in the transport sector through its niche applications because it's got a similar refueling time to cars, but also they say that it would be best for vehicles that take off from the same place and return to the same place. So I know in America, hydrogen forklifts are really popular in warehouses. And so, yeah, so there's interest in hydrogen trains in the UK as a whole, right the way from Scotland all the way down to London, and hydrogen buses as well. And we've got someone in the Northwest region who works on dual fuel combustion engines. So for those who, it might be too expensive to convert a whole fleet to hydrogen fuel cells at the minute, so it would be a diesel and hydrogen combustion engine, and you could switch between operation from diesel and hydrogen.
And is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners, perhaps listening to Roche Valley Radio, and they've just heard a little bit about hydrogen, it might have been in the news? Is there anything you'd like to say about younger people and the opportunities that might be present for academia or the supply chain or any other element of the nascent hydrogen economy?
Yeah, so this hydrogen economy is just on the cusp. It's going to happen in the next few years. So if you are thinking about a research in definitely something that's renewable, especially if you're into science, chemical engineering, etc., just pursue it, because it's going to be a very exciting journey over the next few years, and I couldn't have wished for a better PhD. I really couldn't. It's such a topic that I'm really passionate about.
Congratulations, you've just put on at undergraduate or PhD level, you've just put on a conference that's brought people from far and wide here. And it's been, you can sense the enthusiasm in the room. I kind of sense how stressful it might have been, but obviously well done for getting all these people together and talking, and the enthusiasm that is evident. So, Rhys, thank you very much.
Lovely.
Indeed.
Thank you. Thanks.
So, Charlie, to pick up on a couple of points in that interview with Rhys, she talked about the opportunities for young people in this career. Can you outline what they are, Charlie, please?
Yeah, it was great to see Rhys. She's 22 and she's organised a conference which has had a global impact, and it's here on our doorstep. But a few things struck me. Obviously, I think Rhys was a bit taken aback by the sheer scope of the supply chain that turned up, and you had oil and gas majors, you had chemical industry representatives, you had people like myself that track the industry. And what she was struck at In my day, when I was at university, we used to have, as we graduated, a thing called the milk round, where if you were lucky and you didn't muck up your degree, you would look forward to a nice career. And you'd think, well, what do I do next? How do I about getting that first job? And what used to happen? There used to be a thing called the milk round, where the big companies used to come and say, well, we've got these graduate offerings, or this is available for people that want to pursue their interests. But what Rhys has actually stumbled upon was a new form almost as of a milk round, because what she found unexpectedly, because she, I think, put this out on a thing called LinkedIn, which I use a lot, and she put a little event on, a thing called Eventbrite, which again I use, and just gauged the interest. She didn't know whether anybody was going to turn up or whether just a load of fellow students might turn up, and I think she was taken aback by a packed room of industry. We had people from the big consultancies, such as those that support environmental impact assessment. So that is one route forward for people in wanting to get engaged. Do they want to do the environmental surveys, the air emission surveys, the water surveys? Do they want to help write the reports that start the process? Then she had the industrialists. So you had people that actually like making the canisters. Would people like to work for people putting the canisters into buses, or building the depots, or building bus stations ready for hydrogen? There as well. Also, there were people from an oil and gas background, people like me, were people wanting to look at the new oil and gas, because the Shells and the BPs are not going to be the same in 10, 15 years as they are now. The idea of just pumping out crude is going. So if you're looking at the offshore gas field in the Northwest, Centrica's, you've got your people that are already involved in that supply chain. People from the vessel industry, vessels themselves are looking at hydrogen. Could it be used for propulsion rather than the marine oil that's used at the moment, and the various types of diesel? So they're looking. Anybody interested in chemistry for the research? I mean, it's already happening at Thornton, but nearby SR there. If you're involved in the salt industry, if you're involved in the manufacturing industry, just as in offshore wind, you might want to go and see what kind of valves and sprockets and didgeridoos and various other bits of kit might be needed for the industry going forward. And underpinning that, a technical background, a lot of it's going to be digitized, people are familiar with data, people like us that use remote technology, Adam, all the opportunities are there. So it's so vast, it's difficult to quantify, but by going along, you can see, this is how it's likely to go. And it was support in the budget for some of this carbon capture and storage. So I think the projection is good going forward for it.
So picking up on what you said there, Charlie, it sounds like that this sort of line of work that Rhys wants to go in, it sounds like it could be can be for anyone.
Yeah, I think there's a danger of people just seeing just the pure science. Not everybody wants to be a methane scientist or just concentrate on the hydrogen aspect of chemistry. I think the point I'm trying to get across is that there's going to be much wider ramifications for the economy going forward. Good news, really, because the pipeline network is going to get refreshed, which will be opportunities for companies that make pipelines and do the diggers and all the logistics behind it. But there's a whole heap of opportunities coming, and I would urge listeners, especially those that are at the start of the career, at least have a look at this hydrogen. Have a Google around. I write articles on LinkedIn and American Energy Central. Read them if you're interested in it. And just be aware that as change comes, there will be opportunity with it, because the government will back it, and it's global. Everybody is looking at hydrogen now, the Germans, the Dutch, the Americans, the Canadians, the Far East. So it will happen. And so if you prepare at the start and look a little bit into it, you can find yourself a career that you didn't even know possibly existed. It never really doesn't have much history beyond niche, but now it's going to go from niche to mainstream. So have a look around and see what's out there. There is stuff out there on hydrogen now starting to appear. And feel free to contact me if you want more information, because I went along. And you might find that there are unexpected and exciting career prospects ahead for you.
Charlie, just to wrap up on hydrogen,
yeah.
Where do you think that you can see the different careers in hydrogen going in the next 5, 10, yeah. 15 years?
Yeah, well, the initial ones will be in the report writing. I think we're now pretty clear that the clusters will be formed, and one of them will be here in the Northwest, and that'll be perhaps one of the first in the UK and indeed on the planet. So you'll be right at the forefront of the next, what the people are calling the fourth industrial revolution. The early stuff will be, I suppose, planning out where the network will be, where the pipeline will be, what we need to put the pipeline in place, And who will connect to it? So if I was an industrialist with a factory burning methane, I might think, well, I'd be lobbying so that the hydrogen is coming around to me and making sure that my pipes are ready for it, talking to a few people to make sure that when the transition comes, as come it will, that you're prepared. If you do that, you'll get an early advantage over perhaps competitors. You'll be well placed. You can sell your goods on the basis of a low carbon production, which will help it sell and help you avoid certain bad sides to climate change, which is additional costs for those that don't make it in a clean tech manner. So the initial setup of the hub is worth watching, how the hydrogen hub develops. There will be grant funding doubtless for that and incentives for that. The companies that engage with it, your Peels, your SRs, your INEOSs, those other ones that I mentioned earlier will be worth, they'll be expanding. So there'll be opportunities there. And there'll be opportunities for the manufacturers once they start to connect to the network and the hydrogen comes and costs ultimately come down in the longer run at least, yeah?
So, Charlie, certainly for me, this podcast has been going right outside my my box of knowledge on this type of subject. But it's been something that's been great to learn about.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, Adam? We did the suicide awareness event in Ramsbottom, I suppose. We are a community station, and the programmes that we make are for the community. So we'd love to hear from the community what it thinks. Does it want more of this kind of content? We are, like you say, stepping outside comfort zones somewhat, as we did with the suicide awareness, but that seems to have been well received. So we'd love to hear from our listeners, and if listeners want more content, we're into the current affairs and industrial future of our region, and if they want more, we'd love to hear from you and let us know what you think.
Yeah, so if you want to... want to get in touch with us, obviously we're on Twitter at Roche Valley Radio. We're also on Facebook as well, so if you just search Roche Valley Radio as well. And if you you head to our website, rochevalleyradio.com, you can find all the details if you want to email us as well. So so Charlie, thanks for joining us on today's podcast.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to engage with you, Adam. I hope listeners enjoyed it, and thank you very much indeed.